She musters a smile for his nostalgic tale. Never coming near what he wanted to say, only to realize it never really was. She had a place in his life. He never made her think twice as she rises to her apology. Anybody else would surely know who's watching her go.
This segment of our program, I'm not going to have a guest. I'm going to do open calls on our talkback segment. Call in at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm going to share some short commentaries from Dr. Gary Coles from Global Research on privatization in the name of the ruling elites. What happens to we the people? Also, a study reveals unavoidable dangers every time a kid gets the human papillomavirus vaccine. Really not cool. Haven't you heard time and again those people over on Fox and other places say, well, if you're poor, it's just because you're lazy. You're not working hard enough. Be like us. Work hard and share in the American dream. Really? Well, I'm going to share 20 things the poor really do every day. And one of them isn't being lazy. A prelude to a crash. On the Progressive Commentary Hour last evening, which you really should listen to, Dr. Pale, Craig Roberts and others talked about we are in an enormous bubble and it's going to crash. But there's another reason we're going to crash. Mike Whitney from Counterpunch. I'll tell you that. Also, California drought could be the worst in 500 years from Mother Jones. Thermograms, it's a safe, accurate, and reliable alternative to mammograms, and why you should have those and not mammograms. And are we walking towards a cashless society? Bad idea. We are. I'll give you the latest. I can't get to everything. I'll get to what I can because I also want to take your calls on the issues that are important to you, the questions, the insights. Everyone has some ideas, and this is the forum to share it. You are listening to the number one progressive radio program in the world on the number one progressive radio network in the world. We're happy to have you on board. Before we go to our calls, which we're going to do in a second, we made some slight alterations on something we offered because we've come up with an idea of how to save a little money. I wanted to raise some money for the people on the Progressive Radio Network, so I decided to combine something I enjoy, going to Broadway and off-Broadway plays, having a nice gourmet vegan meal at one of the Upper West Side's finer vegan restaurants, then having a delicious vegan dessert after all that, whole evening, probably 5 to 6 hours. We've brought the price down to $400 for a single and $600 for a couple to join me for the evening. How are we doing that? It's simple. We're going to go down to Ticketmaster's or whatever that place is called at 46 and Broadway and look to see where there's some discounts and therefore go to some of the shows that we can make a 20 or 30% discount, and that way we can save the audience that money and still see a wonderful Broadway or off-Broadway show. It'll be your choice. You can decide what you know, which ones of all the ones that are there we can see, and we'll just enjoy a great evening together. Great meal, conversation, and that's, you know, the taxi ride down and back, the dessert, the meal, and you can order anything off the gourmet menu you want, and then a Broadway show. How about that? For $400 for a single and $600 for a couple. And if you were a couple going out for an evening on Broadway with dinner downtown and two tickets to a Broadway show and transportation or parking your car, you're looking at $400 to $600. So we're going to do it all. And here's what you do. You're going to call this number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. A meal, a Broadway or off-Broadway show, and a dessert uptown, all in an evening, lots of fun, nice way to support this station. 877-627-5065. And we're going to start this in mid-March, and you'll be able to tell us which evening you're free. And that way we can plan it around the evening that you're free. All right? I'm looking forward to this. Now, let's go into our studio in New York City, where I'll be back next week after a long trip on the road. And let's say hello to our executive producer, the person who's sitting there every single day working on the documentaries that you end up watching. And she is here to give us some insights. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Gary. Nice to be here. Right. Well, we're in the process now of editing our newest documentary, that's Poverty, Inc., and it's going really well, and we have great interviews that we've done. But we would like to find families. We'd like to interview families who have fallen below the poverty level, who are homeless now or being foreclosed on due to the economic crisis that we're in. And if you are a family that is in this situation, or you know of anyone who would be interested in sharing their story, we'd really love to include you in the documentary. And it's so important to share your story, because without you, there's no documentary. So if you have any ideas and would like to come and be filmed, please call me. You can call 646-926-5441. That's Valerie at 646-926-5441. Or call Gary's office and just ask for Val. Or you can email me at valerie@garynoel.com. So please, if you know anyone or you are someone, please get in contact with us. Thank you.
Good. And for all of you who have been filmed, for example, all of the people living in the tent city down in the woods in central New Jersey in the Pine area, you're going to be in the film. For those in Camden, on the couple of occasions we shot in the inner city of Camden, Father Dowd over at the Sacred Heart Church, all those people that were in line, but there was no food for them on Christmas, they're all going to be in the film. It's important that we show the true story of what it's like to be the new poor in America. And we're also going to show historically the poor in America and what is the difference today. So this is a powerful film. 5 years working on this. Val will tell you we've had so many hundreds and hundreds of hours of filming. And I'm still out here, still sending her film back. And so this is going to be up to date, the latest stuff. And so if you have a story about what you're going through and would like to share that, please feel free to call Val. Val, give your number one more time.
All right. The number is 646-926-5441.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to be taking your calls for the from here on out in the program, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And now a few things. Talking about the poor, what do the poor do that the average person doesn't? Well, let's go through 20 things the poor really do every day from the Huffington Post. Search for affordable housing. Yes, especially in urban areas. And we know how long the wait list is for an affordable housing. It can be a year or more. But what do you do if you're poor? Then you're going to have to find any place that you can, relatives, or you're simply homeless. Try to make $133 worth of food last a whole month. Think that's not difficult? Then try it. See what you would be able to live on if you had just $4.38 a day and you had a family that you had to feed. How is it that a family can live on $4.38 worth of food a day? then subsist on poor quality food. When I was filming a Sergeant Major, a heck of a nice guy, he's retired, but he ran a little tiny unit. It was just a little motel unit, about 12 rooms, in not good condition, over near Orlando. And I was filming there. You can see him in that film in American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed. The people were allowed to live there for a month, and they were given food, and then they would go out every day and look for work. But the moment you mention you're a homeless vet, it's very difficult. There's a lot of prejudice because people think you have post-traumatic stress disorder or that you're an alcoholic and drug addict. And for the majority, that's not the case at all. In any case, I was in his kitchen. I'm looking at the food. And I said, you're aware that a lot of this, you know, is really, it's not healthy food. And he said, that's what we get. We have to get donated food. And I really felt sorry for the guy, which is one of the reasons I was determined to build a Veterans Village, which, by the way, is done. So there will be a place starting in June where homeless vets will be able to go and get medical care, holistic medical care by board-certified physicians, holistic psychological care by holistic psychologists, and detoxification. And they won't have to pay a penny for it. So I'm going to call him and invite him over because I said sooner or later, I'll get this. And once we do it and show after 6 months how healthy, mentally, physically people are, helping them reintegrate into society, helping them with skills, then maybe this will be a model that other places will use as well. So just imagine if you're a poor person, in all likelihood you're going to be eating really low quality foods. More often than not, Americans, 1 in 6 Americans, have to skip a meal every day. We call it food insecure. Well, that's like Martin Sheen calling the assassination of the Marlon Brando character, you know, terminate with extreme prejudice. Doesn't sound the same as just, you know, shoot the guy in the head. So when we say a person's food insecure, no, they just don't have food. We have 18 million kids that don't have enough food each day. And so they simply go without eating. By the way, the source is U.S. Department of Agriculture. They work longer and harder than most of us. I saw a fella that works in a store on the Upper West Side, and I know the owner of the store. But then when I was down getting some exotic fruits from a store downtown, I saw him there. And I said, did you leave? He said, no. I said, you work 2 jobs? He said, yes. I said, how many? He said, 8 hours here, 8 hours there, plus commute an hour. Plus commute back and forth from Queens an hour. So I said, so you're working almost 17 hours a day? He said, yes. He said, I don't have a choice. So it's very keen for many people in our society, especially those who are the insensitive wealthy. That doesn't mean all wealthy people are insensitive by any measure. But for those who are, they'd like to think you're poor because you're lazy. We know the truth. The poor actually work longer and harder than the rest of us. More than 80% of the impoverished children have at least one parent who works. 60% have at least one parent who works full time. Overall, the poor work longer hours than the so-called job creators. Also, do you have any idea how many people go to bed 3 hours before their first job starts? That's correct. Quote, 44% of the wealthy wake up 3 hours before work starts and versus 3% of the poor. It may be true that most poor people don't wake up 3 hours before work starts, but that could be because they're more likely to work multiple jobs, in which case they are getting to bed late and getting up early. They're not getting a good night's sleep. Also, they put themselves in harm's way, only to be kicked to the streets afterwards. How else do you explain 980,000 homeless veterans? I'm opposed to all of the military conflicts that our military engage in, and I've let them know that. But I'm for them as soldiers, as human beings, who have gone over for whatever motivation, and that is not my responsibility to tell them right or wrong, But it is my responsibility to show them that they're a human being. When they need help, we all should be there to help them. And we're not. There was a woman named Red, and she's called Red by her friends because she's got red hair. And there she is. And she came back after four tours of duty, and her marriage dissolved. She was extremely agitated. And her family finally, after trying everything they could, they said, "You've got to go." And so she found herself one day homeless. And within 2 days, she's being beaten up, raped, and the only place that she could find where she wouldn't be raped would be with other vets in the woods. And they have a real strict code. Interesting, because when I went in there, and I'm filming how the whole camp was set up, and it's a small camp, but the woman's tent was in the middle, and she has a whistle. And she says, "I blow this whistle, they come running." So they know that anyone stupid enough to go into a homeless veteran's camp and start messing with women, you're going to get your ass handed to you, because these guys don't play games. But they're very humble. And when you hear a homeless vet talking, you realize they have nothing. They have nothing. I've met them that don't even have a coat. They just have clothes on their body. One guy, really young guy, in his mid-20s, good-looking guy. I met him at a stand-down. That's where they go to get some free supplies once a year from other vets. And he was telling me the story, and he said, "I'm very embarrassed to say this, but," he said, I lived for a year by going into people's backyards and stealing fruits. That's all I could do. Nobody would hire me. The moment they find out you're a vet, they don't want anything to do with you because of all these myths about us. And he said that it's really rough. You bet it is. And we should be concerned about that. Also, they pay more than their fair share of taxes. This message is for Sean Hannity and those neocons who like to wrap a flag around them in some notion of hyper-masculine patriot stance, as if you're the ones paying the most taxes. You think so? You're only talking about income tax. How about all the other taxes that everyone else has to pay? All right? The bottom 20% of earners pay twice as much in taxes as a share of their income as do the top 1%. And if you doubt me, check the statistics with the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, the January issue. Yeah, the wealthiest 1% have lawyers and accountants that can keep them from paying their fair share of taxes. That's why I've advocated for a flat tax and a fluctuating state tax. Higher the tax for luxury items, lower for essential items. Also, if you're poor, you fall further behind. Even when poverty is the result of poor decision-making, often it doesn't. It's someone else's choices that make the difference. If you experience poverty as a child, you're 400% less likely to graduate high school. If you spend your entire childhood in poverty, you're 500% less likely to graduate, which means your future has substantially been dictated by things not within your control. Also, they raise kids who more often than not will be poor. And they live in chronic pain. Those earning less than $12,000 a year are twice as likely to report feeling physical pain on any given day, but don't have the resources to fight it. They live shorter lives. There's a 14-year gap between the life expectancy of the rich and poor. That's huge. They are more likely to use drugs and alcohol, and they receive less in subsidized benefits than corporations. This is the key. The U.S. government spends about $60 billion on public housing and rental subsidies for low-income families. All right. Do you think that's a lot? How about the $90 billion on just one area of corporate subsidies? Try $70 billion alone on oil subsidies. Altogether, over $700 billion in corporate subsidies. get those corporations, the people that run them, the people that get their advertising on their television shows, they only talk about subsidizing the poor. And also, they get themselves off welfare as soon as possible. That's the statistics. That's from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And they have the same number of children as everyone else. No, Bill O'Reilly, poor people do not have loads of children just so they can stay on welfare. And their major goal in life is just to stay alive. Poverty in America may not be as dire as poverty on other parts of the world, but many working poor families are nonetheless preoccupied with day-to-day survival. So until we have walked in their shoes, let us not cast aspersions against them for our ideological or political rationale. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to David from New Rochelle. Hi, David.
Hi there. Yes, I've got three things, one, two, three. Let me just read them to you first, and then you can just very short, and then you answer them. One, you mentioned two or three months ago about frozen broccoli. You do something to it to make it get fresh again. Number two, how about this thing, this dinner you're talking about? How about instead of down at some fancy restaurant, we do it at your house, you cook, and make it a class in cooking? And number three, Henley. Why is Henley fired? And whatever happened to Andrew Phillips? And maybe you could hire Andrew Phillips, okay?
Let me go through your answers, questions. Broccoli, if it is picked and washed and flash frozen within a couple of hours, which normally it is, then it's going to have its enzymes stopped at the level of freezing. Now, the quality of the freezing, what is important, if they have air or moisture on the broccoli, it will not come out good. It'll come out kind of soggy. It is the quality of having minimal precipitation in the bag, and that's why it's almost best to freeze things yourself, because if you freeze them yourself, you can make sure it's dry. You push the air out of the bag, and by the way, this is true of everything, like sprouts. Transfer the sprouts you get into your own green bag, which is going to last twice as long, keep stuff fresh. And then as you're zipping it across, press out the air. It should be flat. All things that are in a bag should be flat. The oxygen in there speeds up the oxidative stress, which denatures it. Secondly, but broccoli frozen and thawed, and all you do to thaw it is simply run some water over it, and then it's fine. And then you can stir fry it for a few moments. Or what I frequently do when I'm making brown rice, before I put my brown rice in, and you don't have to bring your water to a boil, you just put your broccoli in there for about 2 minutes and take it out again. That's just enough. And then blanch it, put it under cold water. Now it's going to be really tasty because when you're eating it, all the flavor is going to be released. And also, a lot of people make the mistake of not knowing the right techniques in cooking. You should always put your major seasonings in at the end of cooking, put a top on it, and let it steep for about an hour. It is the slow release of these volatile oils and flavors from the herbs and seasonings and the oils that you've used that really impart the flavor into a dish. And that way you'll get a much more aromatic, much more tasty dish. Always cook at a low temperature, and just make sure it's low enough. Just put your finger in, and it shouldn't burn at all. And that's how you get beautiful garlic and onions just to the right consistency. So, and also, you're not denaturing it. It still has its antioxidants. There was a time when I actually invited people for dinner at my home. I did it 30 times. And needless to say, we were always packed, but I was fortunate enough at that time in my life to have a very large apartment. I had one of the largest apartments in the Upper West Side, about 2,000 square feet. And we had a wonderful time because I don't like people in the kitchen when I'm cooking, because I'm used to, as a chef, as a gourmet chef, who's had gourmet vegan restaurants, the first in America, the Fertile Earth. I'm sure some of you ate there. And then Gary's Place, I would do all the cooking. And I would frequently cook for 500 people in an evening. So I like to be in a zone. So I'm mixing and working. I don't like people hovering over me. I don't like people asking me questions. If I'm going to teach a class, that's different. Then you have bleachers set up. In fact, I'm building now a state-of-the-art teaching kitchen. We'll probably even have a teaching cooking, a gourmet raw and vegan cooking school there. But in any case, you have people in the bleachers. Then you have work tables for them. You have a sink, stove, and work area. And you have about six of those. And then you're on the other side and you're showing them each thing. You can't do that in my little tiny apartment because I moved from that big apartment after 20 years into a smaller apartment with a much better view, a spectacular view. And where I got my VersaClimber out on the balcony, and I'm out there for an hour, and I counted how many other apartments could look over at me. And I'm wondering how many people are looking in this direction. Not that they even know who I am. It's just, you know, that I don't see anyone else out on their balconies working out every day of the year, and I am. But it's for the views because my other apartment had sunlight, but no views whatsoever. And I finally wanted the views. So I don't have the room for that. But I never had a bad experience. I never had any nut jobs. I never had anyone who was inappropriate, broke things, sold things, or, you know, used the opportunity inappropriately. So that's why I really love my audience, because they're such nice people. They're just good people, you know, and that's what I like. So I don't fear bringing people into a private space, and that's key. So I can't do that. I just don't have the room. Therefore, I selected four restaurants, all gourmet, all vegan, and dairy-free. So people can choose the restaurant and have a wonderful meal. And later, I don't have them do dessert, but later we do dessert uptown, fresh made that day, and they'll love that. And then they can select the Broadway or off-Broadway show they want to see. So that answered that. Now, I don't know what David is doing. He was the short-term program director of WBAI. Heck of a nice guy. Very professional. He came from NYC, brought some very good standards. But he is a determinist. He's determined to do the right thing. And that's just not possible right now. But he also suggested until such time that all the people in my audience receive their premiums that I shouldn't be on the air. And there I disagreed with him. I said, then what do you expect to happen to the audience when they don't hear me each day? So for integrity, for honesty, for decency, and for understanding creative ways of bringing in income, you bet, he is an asset. Lastly, I don't know where Andrew Phillips is. Andrew and I worked together back in the mid-1980s. In fact, Andrew suggested that we do some syndication. And so I built a state-of-the-art studio. I was on ABC at the time, and I hired the ABC chief engineer, and I rented an apartment in my building just for this. We built a state-of-the-art studio, and then Andrew would record, I think it was five or six different people's shows, and then took them out to syndicate them. But the politics, not the quality of the shows, he selected some really good shows. But the politics were such that they went against him. And he was on the right side of the issue, but he didn't have the power. So none of the shows were syndicated. And so that ended that. And he shortly thereafter left the station. I hadn't seen him in a long time. So I don't know where he's at, but I certainly am going to wish him well in whatever he does, because he's a person of high-level integrity. Hope that answers your questions. Let's say hello to Jeff from New Jersey. Hi, Jeff. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I was wondering if you had done any programs lately about the ongoing Fukushima nightmare and its effect on the Pacific Ocean, and I'll hang up and listen to you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Jeff, I've done several programs bringing everyone up to date on Fukushima. Harvey Wasserman was on recently. Professor Wasserman is probably one of America's three leading experts on Fukushima. We talked about the fact that the government has now passed secrecy laws, just like our national security laws, that if you tell the truth as a scientist, a government employee, or as a journalist, you could be jailed for years. So all of our previous sources have now stopped, and we're using, and they don't have whistleblower laws there. So we're using people who are doing the testing quietly, and the radiation is worse than what we were told. It is spreading. A thyroid cancer is epidemic around Fukushima, and there is no opportunity at this time for the world to come together as it should and encase this and dig down underneath of it as it should. But my hope is at some point that happens before there's an accident with the removal of over 5,000 of those fuel rods. If just one of those 5,000 rods that they're removing one at a time, if one of them were to drop and break, you could have a massive fusion explosion, which would be about 50 to 60 times worse than Chernobyl and literally would condemn all of Japan. It would not be habitable. But the Japanese, from their perspective, are saying, what do we do? Because we don't have any place to put 100 million people, 40 million from around Tokyo, and we were the second leading economy in the world. Now we're third. So they've been quietly and behind the scenes outsourcing their own made in Japan into South Korea and some other countries they have trade agreements with. So I would look in the near future for some kind of agreement to be reached between China and Japan to use China's multiple phantom cities. China has over 16 cities that are huge that could hold more people than live in New York State or California. They're huge metropolises that are empty that could house the Japanese if they could come to some kind of agreement. If, however, there is a major accident beyond what has happened, if that building fell that is precariously sinking, then no one's going to buy anything made in Japan. The economy would be over. It would be an end game for them. So they're afraid to be honest. They're afraid to show their complete vulnerability, and hence they're keeping the public from the truth. Hope that answers your question. I'm Gary Knoll, and we are out of time, and I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in and share your thoughts. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow, and we have a lot more we're going to talk about. NAFTA, 20 years of regret for Mexico and the United States, California drought, the in the environmental segment tomorrow, we are witnessing the end of coral. That's important, and a prelude to a crash. I'm Gary Knoll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on the next program.